Session number 12243, Captain de Courcy Island, Reel 10.
Talking about the scuttling of the High Seas Fleet on the 21st of June 1919, and after the two destroyers had been pushed ashore on Farah, we looked it up, Ireland, then you concentrated on the Hindenburg.
The Hindenburg.
What exactly, how were you going to try
well,
to save
she it? Was lying rather by herself at the head of Farah, rather away from the remainder of the big ships, I don't know why, but she was. She appeared to us, they were a bit slow on starting, and she appeared to us to be completely upright. They'd all evacuated her, but all gone. She was too big to push in to the beach. I think we tried. We pushed her in a bit, but we couldn't move her very much. We then, first sent myself and about, I think an young engineer, and about 25 men, boarded her, and we tried to close all her watertight doors, hatches, scuttles, and what have you. It was a pretty hopeless task, because down below you couldn't see. More or less in the dark.
Did you not have torches or anything?
I think we had torches. We did have torches. We had a couple of torches, but even then it was very difficult to make out a lot of the hatches and things. And she was going down, you see. We started as low as we could. A lot of the hatch bolts were rusted up. So were the scuttles. It was very difficult to shut. Couldn't shut some of them. And as we started as low as we could, and we were forced back the whole time up, you see, like this.
You could see the wall well. You could hear.
Well, hear it, and we after a time we realised it was hopeless, because the weight of the ship, which is going so full of water. The weight of the ship was so much that it blew the hatches.
So even if you shut them,
yes,
they were being blown open.
They were being blown open behind us, or below us. And that went on, I don't know, for some time.
It must have been, you wouldn't have known where all the hatches and the sea cockpits were.
You didn't, no, you didn't.
No. Just you didn't have a plan then? Or
no, what? Nothing.
And was it not a bit nerve-wracking,
Well, yes, it was rather. Yeah, because we had to keep together more or less. We didn't want to get shut down on somebody who was a bit later on down deck below, that sort of thing. So we had sort of worked like that, and that went on. We realised after a time it was hopeless.
How long were you doing? I mean, I know time's difficult, and it's 70 years ago, but how long were you on board then?
I think an hour and a half or something like that, I should say.
And it's constant rushing about.
Yeah, yeah. Then as we got up towards the upper deck, we had a whaler, you see. We got the men off, our chaps off, and first Denton and myself were the last off. I think we had a jump for it, so as I remember. Anyway, we heard her hit the bottom, so we knew we were all right then, you see.
How high up the ship were you?
We were on the bridge. Bridge, at that picture you saw, a funnel, That's where we were.
So she'd sunk actually upright?
Upright, absolutely upright.
Was that anything to do with you? Or was that
well, we hoped it was. We hoped it was.
Because a lot of the others did.
They nearly all heeled over. Nearly all heeled over. A lot went down to the stern, and a lot heeled over.
Was the Hindenburg the only one to?
She was the only one to sink upright like that.
So it could well have been what you'd done.
It could well have been what we'd done. And I always thought it was rather extraordinary, because she was one of the most difficult ones to salvage. And I suppose that was because so many of the hatches had blown, you see. So when they came to salve her, it was jolly difficult to make her get a tight to pump the water out, you see. So presumably that was what it was.
Were there any parties on any other ships from your destroyer, the Westcott?
No, you see, we couldn't spare any more hands. I mean, our ship's company was here, just over 100.
Now, were you in any danger at all of being... There were a lot of German seamen from the fleet in various stages and places. Was there any fears that they might try and board your ship
or anything desperate like that?
Where had they all gone to?
Most of them, with a little encouragement, went on this island.
Would that be Carver or Farah?
No, not Farah, the other one. Carver, or what was it?
Carver.
Carver, that's it. Carver. And I suppose something probably 2,500 congregated there. I can always remember one German seaman, he swam to a buoy off Carver. I suppose he thought it was the best thing to do. At any rate, this was a bellboy. Yes. The thing was going on the whole time like this. He must have had a hell of a time on it, clinging to this old thing. We left him there until about 5 o'clock. I always remember that.
Did you have to round them up, or was your crew involved in rounding them up on Carver?
No.
Who would do that then?
We left that to the big ships when they came in.
Now, there was some a dispute between your captain and the Admiral of the Fleet.
There was.
Could you explain that? Because that's quite interesting.
Well, I'm just going to read out what it is. Probably easier this way. Vice Admiral Sir Sidney Freemantle, or Frowsy Fred, as the sailors called him, had never even acknowledged our existence until, after returning from his fleet exercises, he found turmoil in the flow. He then made a signal to us in plain language, calling for an immediate explanation as to why we had not reported that the Germans were abandoning their ships until 12:15, a quarter of an hour after the skipper of a water boat watering one of the German battleships had clearly observed it, and whose report differed materially from ours. Our captain was furious. I forget the actual wording of our reply, but it is roughly as follows. Since the water boat to which you refer was alongside a battleship when the crew of the ship began to abandon ship, since the said battleship was out of my sight from my berth in Gutter Sound, as indeed were most of the German big ships, due to the presence of the islands of Farah and Carver, since these ships received the signal to scuttle first, and the German destroyers, for which I was responsible last, and after an interval, the difference in time is accountable. So far as material differences are concerned, if you prefer the somewhat excitable version of events by the skipper of a water boat to the considered opinion of the commanding officer of one of HM ships, I have no further explanation to offer. We never had a reply. I think a point I have said here The French, so we were told, wanted to take over a lot of the German fleet and thought that we connived at the scuttling. A crazy idea, trying to absorb another country's ships and weapons, different in design, construction, ammunition, spare parts, etc., etc. Apart from which, had they taken them over, they would have had more than a few shocks. The state of the ships was very poor and grew steadily worse. And an interesting fact that we discovered was that the Germans had cut halfway through the barrels of their big guns and very cleverly putted up the cuts and repainted them. Had anyone tried to fire them without detailed examination, they would have been in for more than a shock.
Did you notice?
Oh, yes, I saw that.
When did you see that, though?
Well, I don't... When we were sort of... Occasionally we'd steam round and just have a look, you see, things. And looking at some ship, I think I was looking at it through glasses, binoculars, and I thought that there was a funny sort of mark halfway up the barrel of one of the 15-inch guns or 12-inch guns. At any rate, we boarded and had a look, and they had cut right round the barrel, in fact all the barrels, the big guns, like that, deep enough to do a necessary amount of damage without, you know, cutting the thing right off, and then putted up the cracks round like that, and then painted it all over again. But of course, the paint, I suppose, had, or the putty had dried, you see, a bit. And so you've got a sort of line like that, which you can see. So that they're really useless.
Anything else about the scuttling?
No, I don't think so. I suppose that one could. No, I had nothing of interest, really. It was a very boring job, really.
Now, there are only two aspects that you were actually had to go and intercept the German mail destroyer.
We were sent out to intercept the German mail destroyer.
Could you just explain the back? I mean, you've explained what that was. Why did you have to intercept it? What was the worry?
Well, we were frightened that she'd... We were frightened that when she came in through Hoxha Sound... and sighted where the German fleet was, and it wasn't there. Whether we didn't know whether they knew anything by then or had been told or anything like that. Probably they didn't know, I expect. But we thought they'd scuttle. We were frightened that they might scuttle in the entrance, you see, and be a hazard. So we were told with... I suppose it was Walpole, to go and intercept her outside, board her with force if necessary, and then bring her in. We boarded her, one each side, like that, while she was still steaming.
How did you manage that?
Crash alongside her and hung on to her. We told them to stop. They were obviously very scared because we were all armed, you see.
So you sailed up to them, told them to stop.
Came up each side like that, told them to stop.
And then jumped aboard. And then were you one of the ones who went aboard?
Yes, I went aboard.
What were you armed with?
I think I had a rifle. That's what I remember.
And you say they were reasonably enough scared?
They were scared stiff. Well, because the impression that we had was that they thought they were all going to be shot. We made them the our engineers rushed the engine room, you see, to cut off everything. The engineers down there had already done some damage, I think. They realised something frightful was happening because we had to tow them in. We couldn't get them going again. No, we rounded them up. I've got one relic of that. There's a sort of cat and nine tails thing, which I took off a petty officer who was rounding up the boys in the destroyer thing. I'll show it you after. So that was that.
And then the two destroyers, you went aboard the two that you pushed ashore later.
Yes. Then we were put on to salvage them.
Actually getting them up. Did you manage that?
Oh yes, we did. It was a hell of a job because the water's damn cold up there.
How did you go about salvaging them? I mean,
dive down, close the scuttles, and then pumped them out. There was an awfully messy job because they'd opened up the oil fuel tanks and there was almost as full of oil as there was water.
And you found a picture there, I believe.
I found a picture down there. I went down until when we got her up. I went down in the mess of water. And looking around, it was a hell of a mess, there was oil fuel everywhere, you see. Looking around, I saw two sort of, well, bumps on the bulkhead, all covered in oil, see, like that. I wondered what the hell there was there, so I had a bit of cotton waste. My hand, I went like that, and there was this painting underneath. And we've still got it. It's a painting of a scene in East Germany, in Prussia. And there were two of these. The oil had preserved them perfectly, extraordinary. And they hardly wanted any, once I'd got the oil off, they hardly wanted any cleaning at all. And I kept that one. I kept one. I think the first time I kept another. We were told that there was to be no looting whatsoever. Nothing was to, everything of any value was to be turned over to the depot ship. I turned over various things. Lovely pair of binoculars I found in the Hindenburg on the bridge, and things like that, which were never seen again, I might say. I don't think what happened to them. I don't think they reached anywhere else other than the depot ship or the people in it. But at any rate, one had things like that. I got the German Rear Admiral's flag, which I gave to Greenwich. That was about all I think I got. So that was that.
It wasn't long after that, the whole affair, that you were sent away to Germany, weren't you?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Now, what was that about?
That was to support the cruiser that was housing the committee doing reparations.
The Coventry.
The Coventry found that the dockyard basin she was berthed in Hamburg, she couldn't get alongside, it was too shallow, alongside the wall. But it would take a destroyer, so we were sent to act as a sort of cat of rag. And we could lie alongside, the Coventry lay outside us without hitting the bottom. It was completely enclosed, the dockyard basin. There were two gates, each manned by German sentries, so-called. The town was in a state of demoralization. They were very badly off for many things. They had no soap, they had no fat, they had no this and the other. The town was being run by a sort of workers' union or something. They all wore armbands. Officers were just treated like dirt. Whoever they were, the sentries who were, we had our own sentries on the gates and the German sentries outside. The German sentries couldn't care less. You could buy their rifle off them for five bob if you wanted to. They were in a very bad way. We had to organize bartering. It had to be done. It's the only way we could run things. One gate was for the sailors, one gate was for the officers.
Was that to stop the black market?
That was to stop the black market. It was to... you couldn't have done anything else other than this. A bar of putter soap, which you pay tuppence for on board, you get five bob for. And everything corresponded like that.
So how was it organized? You had officers...
70 hours, the men's gate and the officers' gate. 70 hours. And you were allowed to go up and take anything you wanted to get rid of and barter it. And that sort of thing, or anything you wanted to buy. They'd bring all their sort of valuables down, that sort of thing, to get a bit of soap or butter or anything like that. We had to organize it, because otherwise we found the sailors were selling their boots and everything. they could lay their hands on. You see, getting fancy prices for it.
Did you do any of it at the officers' gate?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What sort of thing would you...
I got two very nice amber necklaces. My wife's got one of them still, haven't you? Lovely amber necklaces, which I think cost me five bob or something like that. Without spilling too many beans, there was a certain paymaster commander in the Coventry who we used to get a mail over from England once a fortnight, and he used to order lots of soap and things like that come by mail. And he told me whether it's true or not, I don't know, he made over £3,000 at the gate.
And that sort of thing was good. So that was one side of the thing. Was there an unofficial black market as well, or did that...
No, that was how it was organized.
Had stamped it out,
and it was well organized, and it worked, definitely.
What actual duties did you have to do? I mean, you were really only there...
We had no duties at all. We were allowed ashore during daylight hours, but we had to go in a group. You couldn't go ashore singly. And we used to go up to the town and buy various things. The rate of exchange for the mark was about 100 to the pound. The Germans thought that it was worth a shilling still. So we were very well off. We used to go sailing in the two lakes, and in the middle of the city built around two lakes, the Austin Altar, the big altar, the little altar. And you could hire a sailing boat, very nice boat, sort of type of 15-foot dinghy, sailing dinghy type of thing. And you could sail on these lakes for 1 mark an hour, which was a shilling. If you capsized, you were fined 100 marks. We've tried very hard. We found it very difficult to capsize them. They were very frightfully stiff to capsize. Very difficult. That we did that. I remember we went to the opera on one occasion to see Tannhäuser, Wagner. And it began at I think 4:15 and went on until 10:15. And it was very Teutonic. The ladies were so massive, particularly in front, that you could have moored a battleship to them, more or less. The men were equally gross. I remember the first one slept through the whole thing. He said it was so peaceful. It felt like an Atlantic gale when they gave tongue. So that was that. And then we went, I remember going to this Hagenbeck's Deerbach Zoo. And that's where we met the man who owned it. We had a long talk with him, and he showed us all around. And then at the end of it all, he gave us each a lovely ostrich feather fan made out of ostrich feathers and tortoiseshell. And that was it.
What about the mood of the local population? Did you come into much contact? I mean,
no, not other than this chap at the zoo, none at all. And I can remember I didn't see it, but I remember the other son saying to me that he watched a Prussian officer, a real typical Prussian type, walking down the pavement with a drawn sword, just slashing anybody who got in his way to get out of his way. But that was very exceptional. I don't know how long he survived doing that.
And what about the revolutionaries on this? Did you come into contact with them much?
No, we kept away from them.
So you didn't intervene at all?
No, not in any way.
On either side?
No.
But you just kept out of it?
Kept out of it. The only person I really had a talk with was this chap, Hagenbeck, because he was full of the Duke of Bedford, his friend, and all that sort of thing.
Now, so how long were you there for?
6 weeks.
And then what?
Then we came back, and we had this Heligoland incident.
Now, what exactly was that? Could you just explain?
Well, we had to do the crossing to Hamburg and back in daylight, because the minefields hadn't been swept, and there were a lot of mines floating around, and it was felt that if you did it in daylight at 30 knots, we had to do 30 knots, that you were less likely to hit a mine. You would brush it off on the side. On the way back from Hamburg, we had to stop an anchor off Heligoland for the night, and so we anchored just outside the harbour, posted sentries and that sort of thing, because we knew that the garrison were still in the island.
The German garrison.
And they were manning, they had enormous batteries of 11-inch and 12-inch guns, which we felt were rather aimed in our direction. So we anchored there overnight. And it got dark when we heard the sound of a motorboat